SBS live streams and podcasts are supported by advertising.
A new SBS music station is coming.
SBS Pop Euro.
Filled with Eurovision hits non-stop.
You want more? Tune in from the 1st of May
on DAB Radio, online,
the SBS audio app
and SBS On Demand.
You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Hi everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Wednesday, the 29th of April 2026. Today, with the Australian share market fell, the S&P ASX 200 down 0.33%. That's 7 sessions in a row of declines for the market. We'll have the details with Damien Bowie from Wilson Asset Management soon. If you're new to the podcast, welcome. We go into more detail of the top consumer and finance market news stories covered during On The Money on SBS World News. The first confirmation in official data of how the war in the Middle East is impacting Australia's economy. The ABS says headline inflation surged to an annual rate of 4.6% in March, up from 3.7%. That's as automotive fuel prices surged 33% in the month, which is the largest increase since the series began in 2017. It does, however, predate the government's halving of the fuel excise, which started on April 1st. Transport, however, wasn't the largest contributor to annual inflation. That was housing, as electricity costs climbed 25% than where it was a year ago. How much worse is it going to get, and what does it mean for interest rates? For that and more, I spoke with Harry Murphy Cruz, the head of economic research and global trade at Oxford Economics. Harry, firstly, how has the impact of the war been reflected in this inflation report?
So really, we're only seeing, I think, the first glimpses of the impact of the Middle East conflict on Aussie inflation. You know, if you think about the channels of impact of what higher oil prices mean, the first thing that we feel is, you know, when you fill up your car at the pump. So higher petrol, higher diesel costs, all of that is being reflected in this March data, but we haven't really seen those second, third round impacts come through yet. So higher shipping costs, higher transport costs, higher costs of production, that hasn't been reflected yet. That's much more likely to come through April, May, even through to June.
Yeah, so that inflation number, is there worse to come then? I mean, we're yet to see businesses, as you mentioned, pass on these higher fuel costs, right?
Definitely. There's really only one way for inflation to go at the moment, and that is up. And that's because we haven't seen those businesses pass on costs. So again, if you think about what a barrel of oil is used for, half of it generally gets used for petrol and diesel. About 15% gets used for jet fuel and bunker costs, shipping vessels around the world. Those higher fuel costs there add to the cost of transporting goods around the world. So everything comes through there. But also a chunk of it gets used for petrochemicals, the things that go into plastics, that go into resins, adhesives. That is manufacturing base. So all of those costs are yet to be felt, which means we expect not only the headline measure of inflation to move higher, but really what the RBA cares about, which is the underlying measure, that's going to move higher as well. We're forecasting it above 4% by the middle of the year, and then a pretty long tail to get it back to where the RBA wants it, between 2 and 3%.
So a lot of attention on this result on how oil prices have flowed through, right? But housing was actually the highest weighted group in CPI. I think it's related to electricity prices. Can you explain this, and what are the implications of these higher costs?
For sure. So if you remember last year when we had the last inflation crisis before this one, the governments, both federal and state and territory, introduced a whole bunch of electricity rebates. So that lowered the cost of electricity last year. They're being unwound, and so electricity is now higher than it was a year ago, just because we don't have the offset of those rebates. So that's adding to the cost of electricity that gets captured in housing. But there's also just the higher cost of building at the moment. That's been moving higher. We've got labour shortages. We've got material costs that are rising. And it's also the issue that comes through from the Middle East conflict at the moment, which is petrochemicals increase a whole bunch of building materials. That's only going to push those building costs up.
Now, the government pointed to global pressures for the rise in inflation, but inflation was already a lot higher before this conflict and in above the RBA's target band, right?
Yeah, Australia had an inflation problem well before this kicked off. Inflation really picked up towards the back end of last year, driven by a few things. Partly it was households who started to get their mojo back. They started to spend. They got their confidence. They were looking ahead. And what we were saying, what the RBA was kind of foreshadowing as well, was we've got rate cuts coming through this year. Now, households looked at that, they started to spend it, and then that increased some of the price pressures. And you then have firms who tried to ramp up production to meet that extra demand or household spending, and that collided with a whole bunch of government spending at the same time. So you had private sector, you had government all fighting for the same resources, inflation naturally picked up, and then you had an oil crisis on top of that. Well, Australia's really behind the eight ball in trying to navigate this.
All right, so what's this likely to mean for monetary policy next week, the RBA's meeting, and then into the future?
So we're forecasting pretty much a guaranteed rate hike for next week. When you've got inflation where it is, you know, really rates have to move to reflect that. What happens after that? Much more depends on what happens with the Strait of Hormuz. So if we start to see some progress and reopening come through there, perhaps the RBA will actually take a wait and see approach, keep rates at 4.35% for an extended period. That's still restrictive, but, you know, try to avoid hiking rates considerably higher. If we see the Strait of Hormuz remain closed through May and June, the decision's ultimately out of their hands. You're going to have inflation that's well above 5%, pushing 6%, and that means that the RBA is going to have to hike rates, not to lower oil prices, there's nothing they can do with that, but to take the heat out of the other part of the economy.
And then a week after the RBA meets, we've got the federal budget being handed down. What do you think is the message to the government following these inflation figures?
Ultimately, it's got to be restraint. If you go back in history, you look at crises like this in the past, governments of all political persuasions tend to throw money at the problem. The worst thing you can do at a time like this, we've got inflation that's too high. Ultimately, we need to be taking money out of the economy to be able to bring prices or inflation back down. So what, you know, most economists are calling for is much more targeted cost of living relief. Really look at who's hurting at the moment, the households that need it the most, the businesses that are directly impacted by what's happening. Those are the ones that need support, but ultimately we need to be very restrained and not have sort of broad-based cost of living support through the economy. That's one side. The other side is let's make sure that the economy can actually grow quickly enough to meet the demand that's coming. So we need to build, boost our productivity. That comes from tax reform. That comes from investment incentives for firms to actually invest in productivity, enhancing capital. That's cutting red tape. All the things that mean for the next crisis, we're better prepared. We're not an economy that's already overheating. We're actually an economy that's got some space to grow and navigate this.
That's Harry Murphy-Cruz there from Oxford Economics. And there's also the potential pressure on inflation rising wages may have. The Fair Work Commission is expected to hand down its decision on minimum wage increase in early June. And the ACTU is now calling for a rise beyond its 5% claim, along with increased vehicle allowances. Let's take a look at the Australian share market's reaction now, which fell for a seventh straight session today. The ASX 200 down a third of a percent. The healthcare sector the weakest, utilities the best. oOh!media soared 33% following a $750 million private equity takeover bid. And shares in childcare provider G8 Education fell. It told shareholders at its AGM that it'll be closing 40 of its childcare centres following a slide in occupancy rates. Oil is a little higher at around $111 a barrel. That's as the UAE said it would leave OPEC in May. But the real story of the day is inflation and the impact on the economy and equities. To find out more, I spoke with Damien Bowie. He's a portfolio strategist at Wilson Asset Management. Damien, how's the market reacting to today's inflation result? And has it changed the way the market views the direction for future interest rates?
Yeah, the market is a bit mixed about the CPI numbers. On the one hand, because they were slightly softer than what the market was expecting, bonds have rallied, as in yields have fallen, and that's tried to offer some support for the equity market from a valuation perspective. But the other side of it is that the CPI data show a very clear divergence between different components. So anything to do with discretionary spending, those prices are down. Anything to do with non-discretionary spending, cost of living, essential goods and services, they're up. So the March data are a little bit backward looking, but they reinforce the idea from March and going forward that actually the consumer is facing a material cost of living squeeze, and that's going to hurt. And so what the equity market is having to do is say, well, yes, maybe we can see a peak in interest rates because demand growth is slowing, but the problem is demand growth is slowing. And that could actually have some negative earnings ramifications for certain cyclical exposures. So that's where the market's at, trying to juggle the two factors. And in terms of the rates outlook, so we're of the view that currently, you know, the RBA, I think they want to go in May. They've pretty much communicated that. But after that, we think that it's in the bank's best interest to switch to a state of data dependency, because when you look at all the different things that are causing some tightness of financial conditions in the economy, there are many. Interest rates going up, petrol prices going up, exchange rate going up, some fiscal restraint potentially in the next budget. There's a lot of factors, as well as the uncertainty. So the likelihood is that economic growth will slow, round about the time that the RBA does its next rate hike, we'll probably be navigating peak rates. So although that might not have anything to do necessarily with the short-term direction of short-term rates, it will definitely be factored into longer-term interest rates, which is why we think that 10-year yields around 5%, that can probably start to come down from here.
One of the leading influences in the inflation result today was that of higher petrol prices, and that's coming from a result of higher oil prices. The UAE is quitting OPEC next month, yes. But we're still seeing that that oil price rise. What's your take on this? Why is it happening and the implication for energy markets?
Yeah, so obviously within OPEC itself, Iran's a very big part of that, and so within OPEC, there's always an incentive for member countries to sort of exceed their production quotas, which always leads to a little bit of tension. But now that you've actually got a war going on in the Middle East, the tensions are a lot more heightened. So there's a natural incentive for some of the member states to sort of disengage from that. However, the primary issue that the market's concerned about is the double blockade that's going on in the Straits of Hormuz. Until we actually resolve that, well, nobody's really going to be exporting oil in any major sort of quantity. So I think that the market is concerned by comments recently that Donald Trump is sort of digging in for the long haul with the blockade. We'll see whether that actually happens or not. But that's kind of front of mind for many investors at the moment. For as long as we've got that geopolitical tension, maybe the oil price can be bid.
And when we look at international news, we've got two key events happening in the next few days. We've got central bank meetings around the world, namely that of the US Federal Reserve, but we've also got US earnings season, especially for those tech companies, the likes of Alphabet, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, Meta. Is one set of information more important than the other for you as an investor, or are both equally as important?
No, they're both important now. So the reason why I say that is because the market in February was very focused on AI and AI uncertainty and disruption. And in March and April, the attention has shifted to geopolitics. But the set of risks and the set of uncertainty that we're looking at is still the same. So we've just sort of parked the AI uncertainty aspect for a little while because we've got a different sort of shock and the market is only sort of coping with one thing at a time. So as we go forward from here, the earnings of the tech companies are really important. They're obviously a big part of the equity market in the US, and so any guidance that they kind of give will hopefully corroborate what some of the indicators are telling us about economic growth momentum. So far, it's been pretty resilient. So that's one thing that the market's looking for. Another thing that the market's looking for is obviously any guidance as to future earnings growth. So in February, what you saw was a big rebalancing. Structural growers, they basically saw a derating of their outlook while the cyclicals saw an improvement. So now we've actually got the cycles everywhere probably going to slow at some point in response to everything that's happening globally. And so we have to revisit that balance between structural growth and cyclical growth. And this is where the earnings updates that we get from these tech companies are really, really important. But the third thing from the tech companies, which I think is going to be interesting, is any guidance that they give us that help us to be better informed about the shape of AI uncertainty going forward, the pace of change and so on and so forth. So last time we had NVIDIA report and it was actually a really, really good result. It ticked all the boxes, but yet the bounce in NVIDIA share prices lasted like a day and then everything went down because everybody was so concerned that if AI is doing that well, then that's got to be bad for the economy. So we're having to wrestle with these questions. And the risks are that if you do get more evidence of AI disruption, maybe it actually impacts the more cyclical sectors via, hiring restraint or even job losses, as opposed to the business models of stocks that we think are going to be disrupted. Because frankly, that theme has already played out a lot in February. So that's something that's relevant for monetary policy, because obviously if you're sitting there as the Fed, you're looking at inflation going up as a result of Iranian developments and oil prices and things like that. But you've also got the promise that AI could actually cause enough disruption and free up enough capacity in the economy to bring about disinflation. This is certainly the agenda of potentially incoming Chair Warsh. So he wants to get through the rate cuts, but the rest of the Fed members are kind of a little bit iffy about that prospect, given that they are also looking at an inflation shot from the geopolitics. So our view is that what you'll see for the Fed is they'll just be steady as she goes. They won't actually move rates. They'll point to a wide distribution of outcomes and leave it at that and hopefully be more data dependent. And we'll just have to accept that, you know, different people at the Fed have got different views as to where inflation goes in response to AI. So all of that is really important. And most importantly, all of that is actually interlinked.
So with so many moving parts, right, what are you telling your clients right now and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Yeah, so equities have had a pretty good run. I mean, admittedly, you know, we had a bit of a wobble on Iranian woes. Now, if you do get a deal, and we think that they are more likely than not, then you will probably see equities have more of a run. But I think the character of an equity market rally actually starts to change here. So I think you need stocks that are going to have some resilience to the cycle, because the cycle at some point will start to slow. How much it slows is debatable, but, you know, slower growth is a prospect. And the second thing that we need is resilience to obsolescence as a result of all the AI change which is actually going on. Fortunately, there are a whole lot of stocks that have actually suffered their dosage of pain already in both of those camps. So they're fairly unloved, and some of them are actually even on relatively low valuations. So the way that we would summarize our stock selection is that we want unloved quality growth at a reasonable price, which is a bit of a mouthful. But there are a number of stocks which would fall into that category. For example, one of the names that we really like is Goodman Group. And it's a REIT, it's rate sensitive, it's long duration. But one of the interesting things is that, you know, if I told you to buy that, and I also told you that we're facing the worst oil shock since the 1970s, you'd think me a little bit crazy. But the reason why we're thinking this way is where the market is talking about supply shocks and rate hikes, what the market we think has got to come to terms with is that the supply shock can very quickly become a demand shock, as evidenced by the CPI data today, as evidenced by the consumer confidence data that we're seeing. And we really need to understand where we are along that continuum between supply and demand shocks. And then you throw in the AI factor as well. And then you can see that the tipping point could happen sooner rather than later. So this is where we're going at the moment. So we do like Goodman Group. We're quite positive on REITs. In terms of bonds, we actually like very long duration fixed rate bonds, particularly those offered by some of the major banks here.
That's Damien Bowie there from Wilson Asset Management, and he wraps up the podcast for this Wednesday. Give it a like, a review and subscribe if you do enjoy it. Don't forget you can watch On The Money during SBS World News, 6:30 weekdays on SBS. The podcast returns tomorrow. It drops after the market close every weekday, and I'll catch you then. This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decisions.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. Content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.